You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC. Thanks for joining us on the KMC. We're excited to have this episode where we're talking about the book, The Myth of Balance, and the author, Frank Bieler. Privileged to call him a friend. Frank, welcome to the KMC podcast.
Hey, I'm excited to be here, Tom, and I'm glad I can call you a friend as well. I'm glad that, you know, listeners didn't get to tune in before the conversation, before the podcast, but we just get to catch up and talk about family and life and, you know, the unique challenges we all face in church, and we're all in this together, right?
That's right. That's right. Frank, I'm sure unless my listeners have been under a rock somewhere, they should know your name and stuff, but tell us a little bit about what you're doing and where you're at right now.
Yeah, man, we've had such a fun journey and love what we get to do. You know, I'm originally, my wife and I served at Elevation Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. We were there 7 years. We operated as a family pastor, which means we oversaw kids, students, adults, small groups. You know, it seemed like this amazing fit for us, and we thought we would never transition away from that. And we absolutely loved our time there, and God did some really incredible things. We got to produce music there and do fun camps. And in the midst of that, we got to be a part of that campus and church growing from when we joined the staff. There was about 3 campuses, and now I think there's 16 campuses. Wow. So God's done a lot through the ministry there, and I love the staff and leaders there. But along the way, my wife and I felt a unique, very specific calling to partner and minister to millennial families and what that could look like and should look that like that, and what we were learning and how we could share that with possibly other church leaders. And over the last few years, I've had the privilege of partnering with Orange and, you know, speaking and traveling for them and representing them. And we've just become great friends. And Reggie is just a great, great leader, Reggie Joyner, that is. And somewhere along the way, it just made sense for us to partner together. So January of this year, 2017, we partnered together to do a couple things. One is something that you'll hear lots about in the future, I hope, called Faze Family Center. It's just a unique way of connecting with millennial families. You'll hear more about that later. But then I spend a lot of my days doing the Executive Director of Leadership Development. Doesn't that sound important?
That right? Sounds good.
And so what that means is that for the strategy of Orange and the company of Rethink, I get to oversee the resources that are created here on behalf of this organization to support staff at churches to do ministry better. So this is our You Lead coaching program. This is content, blogs. My latest book is the first You Lead book to be released. Once again, a book trying to help ministry leaders thrive and survive in ministry and do it well. And so I get to spend my days doing that, which I love doing. And, you know, we had a pretty sizable staff at Elevation, and so got to invest in them. And now I get to invest in churches all over the place. You know, Orange is partnered currently with over 10,000 churches. And so what a privilege to be able to connect with leaders of churches of all size and just try to help share what we're learning through our experience, and then also what we're learning from other churches, and kind of bring the things together. And so we're having a great time, Tom. That's a little bit about it. In the midst of that, my wife was the children's pastor at Elevation Church. I'm sure you'll have her on this podcast at some point.
Absolutely.
She's really a genius at multi-site and volunteers. Like, she just knows how to do it and do it well. She's releasing a book this fall. That's really exciting. But we have fun together and make a good team.
So there'll be a competition in the Bieler house about who sells the most books. Is that?
Yeah, that's it. We're going to phrase it a little differently. Who helps the most leaders? But you better believe at some point there's going to be a little scoreboard, because my wife and I are both very competitive. Winner gets free Taco Bell or something.
There we go. Loser has to buy. All right. You heard it here on the, right on the KMC podcast. We'll get Jessica on for sure. Definitely have to get her and Gina on for the book, but I definitely want to get her on for some episodes on volunteers and multi-site stuff.
She is so sharp. She really understands this.
Yeah. And, well, you can plug her blog later.
because that would be a good one to share with our leaders. But
yeah,
but let's dive in. I was super excited when I got to Orange Conference to pick up, and I even have it sitting right here. So if you're watching the video, it's there, right there, The Myth of Balance. I even got the autographed copy. Yes, there it is.
Whoa. I'm sorry. You got a copy that's already been written in. I don't know if that loses value, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's some guy named Frank, Psalm 63. I've never heard that last name before. Psalm 63. There you go. But hey, you know, he should be a good author. Yeah. But anyway, I really liked this book. Was kind of jealous I didn't think of it first. Having been in ministry a long time, but because I've always battled with that idea of being in balance. And yeah, I think everybody in ministry struggles with how do I find balance and can I find balance? And so, Frank, why do you say the myth of balance?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately I think pursuing balance specifically as ministry leaders, but I think in life in general, is a flawed pursuit. You know, the book starts off with this idea that, you know, the idea of balance is like the Yeti. It's a mythical creature. No one's ever actually seen it or found it. People have alluded to think they've got a blurry photo somewhere of where they finally captured balance, but then it was gone in a blink of an eye. So the whole idea of, well, if we're going to pursue balance and we're never going to find it, in the midst of all the challenges that we face in ministry, I mean, ministry is complicated. It's very difficult to do what we are called to do. And in the midst of that, to be failing at something constantly, this idea of balance, can be really frustrating. And so my wife and I were trying to figure out how to navigate this very real tension for our family. At that point, we had 3 kids. Now we have 4. We just adopted another teenager in our house because I guess we were bored, you know, needed some more challenge in our house. But we were sitting there saying, hey, the way we're doing ministry right now and the way we're managing our life, there's got to be a better way. And I started by going to the people I loved and respected and said, tell me how you do this. How do you balance? And I quickly discovered that none of them were balancing. They don't even use that language. And so somewhere along the way, I was like, well, if it's not balance, what is it? And that's where you kind of see as the book develops. And I actually just found out, Thomas, it's kind of interesting, Google or Amazon has a rating, a book ranking for the top selling books that are short reads in 90 minutes or less. Like they have a category for that for people that like to read short books. And my book falls in that category. It's a whopping 83 pages, I think, plus maybe some little bonus content. But the whole idea was that book was way longer, but we just kept cutting it because we wanted to just get to the practical ideas that hopefully help ministry leaders apply it, you know, today after lunch break.
So let me ask you, what did you, in your experience, what did you try to do to find balance? What were some of the things that you did?
Yeah, great. Where we continued to fail, right? Well, yeah. One of the things that we tried to do is we tried to control our schedule. And we're like, you know what? We're just going to sit down as a family and by golly, our calendar is going to be this way. And we're going to hold all these rules and we're going to lay out boundaries. We're going to take Dr. Henry Cloud's idea of boundaries to the next level. We're going to draw lines everywhere. And in ministry, you know that every great ministry opportunity is an exception to the rule, right? It doesn't fit in your calendar. It's no one needs you most at a time that fits your schedule, right? When they're brokenness, when they're going through difficult things, whether it be something at the hospital or something tragic has occurred, or just a need in someone's marriage or family or parenting issues, that doesn't fit on the calendar. And so here we were saying, no, we're going to draw hard lines in the calendar. We're going to operate. We're going to have family dinner every day at 5:15, we're going to do this and this and this. And we realized that was impossible to keep. And so what happened was my wife and I were driving each other crazy and letting each other down all the time because we kept saying, we're going to do this. And then I would call and say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be there. I can't do that because this has come up and it's really important. And so that was probably our biggest effort was we're going to balance our calendar. And then we quickly realized that actually isn't going to happen. It doesn't work in ministry to have this perfectly clean, balanced look on a calendar.
Right. You know, you said in the book, I actually highlighted this phrase here. The sentence was, making balance the goal distracts from having a plan when things inevitably go out of balance. I like that. That sometimes we get so focused on finding the balance that then when those distractions come, what in your life taught you that lesson that sometimes making that goal, you know, it wasn't the right way to go, really?
Yeah, I think it just got old, honestly, telling my family I'm sorry, having to let them down time and time again in the name of, okay, I've got it figured out. We're going to do this. We're going to leave it this time. I'm going to control everything. And I think along the way, I just realized that something's got to change in the way I operate with my family, the way I manage my life. Mm-hmm. And I just kept frustrating people. Somebody was always losing. And I was like, there's got to be a way. I don't know that when Jesus said, you know, in John 10:10, I'll come to give you life and give it to you to the full. I don't think he intended our crazy, unbalanced, insane, unhealthy schedules where most ministry leaders are struggling with issues with their marriage and their kids, and they're really, really having a hard time struggling with it and navigating it. And so I'm like, something's got to give. And The solution could have easily been, well, maybe I don't have a calling in ministry at all to help other people to do that. I could just, this sounds horrible. I want a 9-to-5 job and I'm going to control it. And that didn't seem like a good option because it didn't feel like my calling was temporary. You know, Tom, you and I were talking on the phone, even though my job recently changed, right now I'm running two very full-time jobs, right? I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And it's all in the name of reaching people for Jesus. And so It's like, hey, this isn't convenient. This isn't clean what we get to do. But there's something to say, if our calling isn't temporary and these lies that we tell each other ourselves about seasons, I think that's one of the things that we do in ministry is we try to convince ourselves that we're just in a busy season.
Right.
We originally say that around things like Christmas and Easter, but before long you look up and you're always either in a busy season or preparing for the next busy season. Like there's no gap. And so I think the whole idea of seasons is that they change, right? And the idea, it makes us feel good to think I'm in a busy season, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. But the way most of us do ministry, we just go from one busy season to the next. And so I was like, wait a second, this just changing our language, just trying to navigate or being hopeful isn't enough for us to really get our arms around our ministry and our calling.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's funny because I think sometimes when we get to conferences, we like to brag to each other about how tired we are, how worn out we are, how busy we are. You know, it caught me. I actually got convicted about this while serving in a church where on a Sunday morning, I had a person come up to me and go, man, you look really tired. And I'm like, yeah, I've been working on this project and this project and this project. And afterwards, I'm like, what am I doing? I mean, this isn't healthy. This isn't right. And then I thought, well, maybe it's because I'm not organized enough. And so then I told myself, all right, I got to get organized. I got to find a better to-do list app. I've got to start my checklist, and which is, you know me, Frank, I'm all over the place with squirrels running everywhere. And so a checklist and me are not always the best of friends. And I tried to find balance that way, that I'll balance myself out. If I get more organized, then I can get more done. And therefore, I'm not going to, you know, I'll balance the busyness and my family. And like you, I started to realize that I was apologizing because I was at the church more. I even was talking to a pastor friend of mine recently, and his wife said, when they first started at this new church, does daddy live there and not here anymore?
Wow.
And it hit him hard that he needed to make some changes. And so I like this. You've got this in big, bold print. We don't want to slow down, so we often choose to ignore the warnings and the people in our lives who are telling us to watch out for potential catastrophe.
There's a little story tied to that in the book where I talk about being on an airplane, right? And they come up and it's the beginning and they're telling me to shut my computer and turn off my iPad because they want to tell me all these rules.
And I relate to that.
Because I'm in a very important episode of Seinfeld, right? I was traveling. I had heard that all before. And they were giving me the warnings and helping me in the event of an accident, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just ignoring it because I was familiar with it. Heard it all before. It's just my reality. Whatever. It's going to be fine. Nothing's going to happen. But there's something to say. I think it's a little arrogant. And I'm the first one to deal with this. It's a little arrogant to say, you know what? I know other pastors, other ministry leaders, other families struggle with this tension of balance how it works, but I'm different. I'm superhuman. I'm able to do more. I can do more. I can do it better. I can last longer. I can do all these things. And we somehow say, yeah, that's their problem, but we don't see how it affects us. And yet the reality is it affects all of us. This tension, this challenge that we face, it doesn't matter how cleanly you get your calendar because ministry isn't about what fits on the calendar, right? It's not clean right. like that. Ministry right. has so many exceptions. And until we shift and come up with a better way to manage those exceptions, that's when we're going to see a real change. Because if we don't, nothing changes in our life and we just keep getting hit from side to side.
Yeah. And so one of the warning signs that you also talk about is that when we start saying they, what can a person do? Cause I know some of our listeners, well, I've been there. I've said it. I know I've heard myself say it as I was reading the book. That was one of the things that the Lord was just kind of plinking me in the forehead with. Was that how often did I get into this me versus them mentality? Because again, I was trying to balance so much and I didn't catch it as a warning sign at the time. So what do you say to a person that they start saying, you know, well, they want me to do this and they want, you know, you're starting to put others in front of your family, in front of your spiritual walk. It's a hard thing, but you start declaring division in the church because, you know, you've created that division. So how do you talk to somebody? How would you coach somebody that maybe is struggling with that right now?
Yeah. So we oftentimes give people more authority over our calendar or our schedule or our lives than they actually even have. Like we want to put, well, I have to work late tonight because they said this, they did this. They don't understand what all I've got to do. Now I've got to go do this too. There becomes this negative thing. And yet early on, certainly like when you're planning a church, this is a good example. You mentioned a church planner earlier. Church planners, we are doing this in the community. We get to do this. And somewhere along the way, it goes from this excited core group of people to where it's like they are kind of dumping stuff on me. They're loading me down. And it's me versus the rest of the world. Well, who put us in this position? We want to say it's somebody else put us in that position to say they, but I think it's on us. I think we've put ourselves in that position. So if we're getting inundated with work that's impossible to manage, I would say the first thing you need to do is ask yourself, how do they know how hard it is or the workload that you currently carry? How are you communicating that? Are you assuming that you're senior pastor is currently watching everything you post on social media, and every time you post something about vacation Bible school or whatever, they know how many hours that equates to in your life and how hard you've worked? Because a lot of times we go in, we don't want to limit opportunities for ourselves in ministry and opportunities to lead, so we just say yes. Well, that communicates that you have plenty of capacity. The other thing is, oftentimes you say yes to stuff that you don't realize the ramifications of it till later because we're not really organized, right?
Right.
So we're like, oh yeah, I can do that. But then you realize you've committed to three other things or one thing's behind schedule. And now when are you going to catch up on that? So by accepting something that maybe that day at that time, you have a little gap, but if one thing goes wrong or one thing doesn't meet the schedule, then you're way behind and yet you've just committed to something else. I always like to use the example of, it feels like in the summertime, a lot of churches these days, their pastors will take some time off. They'll allow some other people to speak in the pulpit and share. And oftentimes they'll tap on a kids ministry leader or a student ministry leader to help with programming during the summer. Well, that is a horrible thing to do to most kids and student pastors from the standpoint of they are absolutely slammed over the summer with camps and vacation Bible schools. And so that's crazy. But here's the senior pastor maybe thinking, I'm just trying to help. Here's an opportunity to get your ministry in front of the whole church. And that's exciting and awesome. And you don't want to miss that opportunity. But we get frustrated because we're like, how do I manage all this? Well, did anybody know that you're actually juggling a lot? How do you communicate that? And it's like, well, I work hard. Don't they know how hard I work? The answer is no.
Right.
They don't know. I don't know how hard any of you work that I'm talking to right now, all right, that's listening to this. You have to communicate. What is it that takes a lot of time and responsibility? And some of you, your churches have preschools or Mother's Day Out or other programs that take time that may not all get added up. We actually ran a staff child care program for staff at Elevation Church that for a while I got to oversee that. That was a thing that I was responsible for that took a fair amount of time, but was never really discussed in my one-on-ones or my developmental meetings with my direct report, right? So it was just something we did. And so when other things would be added, that was never part of the equation. It's something that I was managing as well. It just wasn't flashy. It was just something we did, right? And so it's my job to say, hey, and here's the best way to do it. I don't want to just frustrate everybody. Here's how you communicate the tension that you're currently facing with your leaders. Say, I am currently doing this, this, and this. I would like to take on what you're suggesting, or I'd like to take on this another initiative, but I can't reconcile how to get it all done. Can you help me understand the best way to manage all of these things?
Right on.
Because what it does, it heightens the awareness of what the tensions are, right? Here's what I'm really facing. And you're not whining or complaining. You're saying, I'll do it. Just help me know how to do it better. And so you increase the awareness of the tensions that you're facing in ministry. And you're going to your leader whose job is to help you navigate this stuff to say, I'm feeling a real tension here. The problem is a lot of times we just keep taking it on and smiling. And then one day go in and we're completely broken.
Right.
And I think leaders hate to be blindsided, right? Don't go in and be like, everything was fine. And then tomorrow you're crying because you can't handle it all. Because as a leader, I don't know what to do with that. So keep me aware of what's going on and I can kind of see patterns so we can navigate it together.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what senior leaders end up seeing is all of the balls getting dropped. And they, because that's what they hear about sometimes is, well, if you didn't do a good job in this and that, and that's because you were juggling all these other ones. And I think we've got to break away from being afraid to be honest with our leaders to say, like you said, I've got this, this, and this going. Now, how can you help me do this better? And you boiled down to four simple words. When I got to this part, I'm like, okay, Frank, no way could it be that simple. Why haven't I discovered this before? Because it really does break down. If you start using this filter, it helps every leader, any leader, whether you're in a small church or big church, get into the right place. So I want people to pick up the book, obviously, and I know you're not concerned about it, but I think people need to get this. Plus, because of the fact that you pause in each chapter and you put some really good thought-provoking questions after every chapter to get people to start thinking through, get myself thinking through some of these kind of things. But you boil down what helps you tame this mythical beast of balance. Share with us what those words are.
Sure. It's a simple phrase, when this, then that. And the idea is that what if we know that exceptions are going to occur? What if we can prepare in advance for some of those exceptions? And what I mean is that I mentioned earlier, ministry is filled with exceptions. And that a lot of times, things that we know they're going to happen, we just don't know when, so they don't fit on our calendar clean, but because of the rhythm or our responsibilities in ministry, there are certain things that are going to happen. But once again, they don't fit in the schedule super clean. So it's how do we manage those? Most of us in ministry will spend our lives being completely shocked and surprised when they happen. Like, whoa, where did that come from? I had no idea that that was going to get thrown in the mix. Now I have no idea how to manage my life. Because now I've got this wedding to do, and there's rehearsal, and then there's the actual wedding ceremony itself, and I got to be at this, and then there's this funeral, and there's these things that come up. And what ends up happening is you already have a really full schedule. You're not prepared for anything like this to happen. And then when it does happen, the easiest, cleanest things to do is just to drop your personal things, time with friends, time with family, and squeeze it in, right? That's what ends up happening. Well, when this and that is just to say, hey, you can't plan for everything, but there are things that you know are going to happen over the next 2 months, and you could go ahead and come up with a plan with how you'll manage those today. So when this, then that. One of the examples I give in the book, and I'll explain why, well, maybe the book is more helpful than just this phrase in just a second, but let me give you an example. When this and that. At Elevation, we had the privilege for a few years to help do the final interviews at Elevation Church, right? So people would come through this very rigorous interview process. And then if they made it to the final interview was actually over dinner. My wife and I would take them out to eat with along with a couple other couples. We take on this responsibility to take people out to eat. And we're just trying to check one last time if they were crazy, right? See if there's anything weird or wild about them that we needed to know and give them a chance to ask questions and see kind of where they're at as individuals getting ready to come on staff potentially. And so it was a great key part of the way we hired. The problem was those would come kind of out of nowhere. Somebody would travel into town and suddenly that night I need to do an interview. And so what may have been planned family time or something out now got hit with this interview. Well, I didn't know when they were going to happen, but I knew they would. And so we made a rule. Instead of me calling home and saying, hey, I've been surprised by another interview. I'm sorry, kids. We won't be around. We changed our strategy. We said, you know what? This is really important. We explained to the kids why these interviews were important. That's good. But then what else does it equate to? We decided that two tensions we were facing, the interviews were going really, really long. So we were gone really late at night for a long time. And they were taking us away from our family. So we decided this. We're going to take our kids to the same restaurant, let them sit at a different table. They get to order an appetizer and a dessert, but only when we're doing an interview. So now something that was negative is now a positive, because now when I call home and say, I'm doing an interview, instead of them being sad and all mopey, they're like, yes, appetizer and dessert. Can we go to, you know, they're picking restaurants. And now some of that created attention in ministry now becomes a fun thing we do as a family and feels kind of special. The other thing it did was because they were at a table right down the way, at some point about 90 minutes in, they were done sitting at that table, right? It was time to leave. And so it made it sure that we were efficient with our time in that interview. And we didn't give a disproportionate amount of time to these interviewees than we did to our family, right? So it was a unique way to integrate what was happening with our family with what was happening with work. But once again, if we treated them like we did for years, as though they were a surprise every time they happened, our family is disappointed, and it's like we have no plan. Just drop everything and go. I don't know what to do. And so when you drop stuff, people suffer, right? It's always someone gets disappointed. So when this and that said, we're not going to drop it. We're taking plans change tonight, but it's not a bad change. Look at what we can do. It's fun for the family. The book is filled with other examples like that. Toward the back, there's actually some ministry leaders that kind of give their own example. Before they had the when this and that phrase, they were already finding ways to navigate this. So they worked in the book. And then also, the book, there's a chapter that's probably right outside of just getting the mindset shift of when this and that. It's this critical chapter where we say, hey, here's six things that when you're building these formulas, if you don't build them the right way, you're actually going to do more harm to your family, friends, and ministry than good. You're actually going to put unnecessary burdens on yourself. So we found it wasn't enough to just come up with a phrase and start implementing it. We did it wrong a few times. We actually made it really messy for our family at first. But we found some things like, oh, well, don't put this burden on yourself. Don't do this. And along the way, ended up at a really good space. And we've been doing this now for several years. We taught all our staff at Elevation to do it. It's helped them. And we've got to speak at conferences and share it for a few years. So this is like real practical stuff that we're seeing happen. And just now it's come into a book form.
Yeah. And it is awesome. You know, I love this. When guidelines are clear and solutions are created in advance, serving in the local church becomes an empowering way of life, not a sacrificial burden to bear. And I think that's true for us and for our kids. I mean, I wanted my kids to love ministry life. My dad was a pastor, and you know, he found a way to do those kind of things, to bring us along just like that, where, you know, hey, it wasn't so bad. I mean, we get appetizer and dessert. Hey, that's cool. When I got to speak at camps, I would take some of my kids, and usually, you know, we always got the free perks at the snack shack, and you got extra round of go-karting when nobody else was there, because, you know, it was just the speaker guy and his kid, you know, or we got to use the pool when nobody else did. I always tried to squeeze out some of those kind of things because I wanted my kids to feel like, hey, this isn't such a drudgery to be along with dad when he's got to go do these kind of things, right. Even though, you know, and I think that really helps. But there are going to be those exceptions. And there are going to be those times where life gets messy. But if you have that plan of saying when this, then that's, I just really believe that as more people start to grab onto this, that this is going to really truly help people. Bring that stress level down. Whether you're a super highly organized or you're a super messy, all over the place person like me sometimes, who's learning and has learned a lot more about being more organized and functioning that way. I think this is a powerful, powerful truth. What are a couple other ways that leaders can prepare for those exceptions, though? I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are as far as when they come, because like some people who are the so highly analytical list person, if it's not on the list, they tend to freak out.
Yeah.
What do they do? How do they handle those exceptions?
Well, part of it is involve the people that are affected in how you manage the schedule, manage those exceptions. So for example, my daughter, she got into competitive dancing a year ago, and that's a whole nother level. Oh my gosh. I mean, I feel like she's, first of all, there's glitter all over our house. Like
that's evil. All that stuff's evil.
Oh gosh, it's a mess. And so she really got into it. She's very talented. Now, to be honest, we enrolled her when she was 3 years old because she was being real shy. And if she quit tomorrow, I don't know that I really care. It's been good for her. So we're not really pushing her, but she's really into it, a lot into it. And so we got her schedule of all the things that she wanted to do and all the, you know, competitions. And they're all on the weekend. And, you know, we work in a church, so that's very difficult to be a part of those. And I was trying to figure out a way to make one of the events happen. It was the big event, you know, the one with the most people there. It was a national competition. Like, that's where I needed to be. It was a couple hours away, but I was going to be in another state. And so I was like, how am I going to manage this? And I'm trying to figure it out because it was this another variable, this time not coming from the church, but coming from home. This unexpected variables worked in the mix outside of our regular routine. And I'm trying to figure out a way to navigate it along with the whole schedule. I'm like, okay, I won't do all these little ones, but I'll do this big one. And at some point I sat down with my daughter and I just said, all right, it's going to be really complicated. I'm only going to be there for a short amount of time, but I think I've worked it out. And I thought I was being super dad. And she looked at me, and she is the sweetest little girl. She looked up at me and she goes, okay, but can you be at this one? And she pointed at the one that literally was like 4 miles from our house, 5 miles from our house, at a retirement facility. No stage, no fancy lights. There's going to be like 50 people there. I would have never picked that one as the one she wanted to be at. And it caught me off guard. She didn't even care. When I told her about the big flash one, she's like, okay, cool. Can you be at this one? And I said, why? Why do you want me at this one? And she said, well, that one has a pageant element and I get to wear my new dress there. And so here I was trying to navigate something, trying to make it work, trying to be there for everybody when that's not what my daughter wanted at all. She just wanted me, but I didn't think to do the one thing, which was ask her. So part of the challenge with exceptions is when we have this new variable come into our life, to sit down with our family or our friends or our roommates or whoever it is in our life and have them help us come up with these recipes, these plans, these formulas, this when, this, and that, to say, all right, how are we going to solve these? And one of the things that came out of that was a when, this, then that, of when the schedule gets released. Before my wife and I try to figure out the competition schedule or the basketball schedule or the football schedule, depending on which kid it is, before we figure out all the schedules, we sit down with our kids and go, you know, we are have a very full life, and we have the privilege of helping a lot of people. But that means we can't do everything all the time. What's most important to you? So when we get the new schedule, then we have a family meeting to discuss it. Because I tell you this, if I would have missed that big event, I would have beat myself up as a father for a while. That one would have eaten me alive, and yet right. She wouldn't have even cared. And she would have been sweet and said, it's okay, Daddy, and I wouldn't have believed her. But when I met with her beforehand, I realized that, I chose the wrong one. And so I think the key to creating these exceptions and come up with these routines that work best for you and your family, or you and your friends or your roommates. And, you know, one of the ones I love, there's this girl, she had these best friend roommates. She worked for me at Elevation, and they were just a tribe together, right? They were an awesome crew, but her schedule started to get really busy, and she wasn't home a lot. And she was trying to figure out a way, because it felt like she wasn't as close to her roommates, that she was living in the same place, but they were never seeing each other. And they came up with a plan that if on Mondays, if they saw the week was going to get out of control, then sometime that week, they were all going to go to a coffee house and work together beside each other at a coffee house in the evening. And there was something about just in proximity to one another. We're still going to make priority to be friends and be around each other, even if we all have a little work to do. And what ended up happening was some people were behind trying to catch up. Other people were taking that time to get a little ahead on life or work or whatever, but they were there together. And it was so good for them to come up with this plan and say, when Monday looks like the week's going to get out of control, then let's sit down and talk about our time to actually do work, but do it in the same room. And so there's these ways to say that the key is opening up lines of communication. And our communication for the longest time in ministry has been, I'll communicate to you that I'm sorry, that I'm failing, that I don't know what to do. One of those three things. Like, I'm just trying to figure it out. And along the way, hopefully I'll give you a reason that makes you feel good about my choice. Vision of why it was important that I was there. Right. But what if we said, no, we're going to keep the lines of communication open. We're just going to shift the way we talk about it and get a little more honest and real with each other, saying, hey, we can't do everything as a family. We can't be everywhere. Early on in our marriage, my wife and I sat down with our kids, and we made certain sports off limits. Now, you may think that's crazy, but for us, we were like, these don't work. And the reason they don't work is because they are way too involved for your young age. They're six nights a week practice or crazy things like that, or they're heavy weekends, and we can't make that work. You know what they did? They chose other sports and they were fine. It wasn't like they didn't do anything. You know, we just found a plan around that. And so we found that routine. One thing that's kind of weird for our family is we gave up on family dinners. Okay, and gave up. I don't want that to be a negative thing.
Oh, no.
Well, for us, we realized that we were putting a pressure on ourselves to sit down and have family dinner. But that wasn't actually something that my wife or I was really passionate about. We're way more passionate about playing board games together. And so what would happen would be 5:30, 6 o'clock would roll around. I wasn't home. My wife wasn't home. We're feeling bad because we're not doing dinner together. And now you know what happens? Somewhere between 4:15 and 7:15, our family eats food. And they all eat food whenever they need food. And Jessica makes one meal and they can eat it or not eat it, whatever. They can bowl cereal, whatever. But around 7:15, 7:30, you better believe we're outside shooting a basketball or we're in the floor, because we found that was actually our priority of our time together, because we realized when we sat as a table of six, the conversations weren't these wholesome, awesome, great conversations. It was a little chaotic. Somebody was spilling something. Somebody wanted more. We were up and down the whole time. So that wasn't our bonding family time. Our bonding family time became playing Ticket to Ride or Settlers of Catan and open it up and getting these involved games that lasted way too long. And so we traded one for the other. But there was something, but from her family's background, that was like, we do family dinner at 5:30. And it put this unique burden on us. And we're like, wait, why would we put that recipe in place for our family? Because we're always going to fail at that. There's always going to be something that hangs this up. So maybe we have a rule that's more important to us, which was that game time.
See, I love it. Our families are a lot alike, Frank, because April and I did the same thing. We gave up on two things, family dinners and family devotion time.
Yeah.
She grew up with a family that every night would sit down and have dinner together. Then they would move to the living room, and they would all pull out their Bibles, and they would read through the entire Bible. Wow. Which was fun when I was over there visiting, and you get into like Song of Solomon or something, you know, it was just because they didn't skip anything. And it got awkward as a teenager. when you're reading this stuff, it's like, wow, didn't know that was in the Bible. but for our kids, my wife and I, we started talking about that. And for me, I mean, my family would have Sunday dinner usually after church, but it was usually way late because my dad was always the last one out of the building, and we were always waiting. And, you know, and by the time he got there, most of us kids had already snuck enough snacks that we weren't really that hungry. So it was a very short-lived dinner time. So both of us came from families that were just like, you know what? We'd rather just grab our plates and go sit on the couch and turn on a show together to watch.
Right.
Or, you know, do a movie together, or like you guys, we played board games, you know, and we found our camping trips turned out to be times for us, that we just hung out together. And those were the most uninterrupted times. Cause we have four kids too. And lunch conversation or dinner conversation was, well, it's never really that appropriate anyway.
Sure.
The different sounds and noises and you never knew what was going to come up. So it was never this holy spiritual time. And I found, I took the pressure off myself. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to do this. I don't have to be Pastor Tom when I'm sitting at the dinner table. I just need to be dad. And I just wanted to be real with my kids and have a good time. So I applaud you guys for that. I think a lot of us leaders, we put too much pressure trying to find this balance beast.
Right.
And I'm so glad you wrote the book. Cause I think if we would look at this, it could really, you know, so many people, I mean, you go to a lot of conferences too. The whole thing of burnout. Right. And I've been on the edge of it, and you probably have too. And those are some of the biggest breakouts, and it makes me sad every time I go, because it's like those shouldn't be the best attended ones. And if we would learn to just live the life that God has wired us to live, and enjoy it, and to have a little bit of a plan that, okay, when this, then that. Those four simple little words. I think if you don't get anything else out of this podcast, I hope you take away those four words and say, how can I implement that into my life for my family's sake? So I don't see my kids get just so discouraged that they walk away from the church. Cause far too many PKs do that.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I had the chance, I got to go speak, with another ministry this summer, out, and I got to talk to 200 pastors' kids.
Wow.
It was stinking awesome. One of the most incredible times I've ever had, just to challenge them that, you know what? Yeah. Sometimes our parents make some big sacrifices, and sometimes it involves us as kids, but you know, I wanted to challenge them to have a bigger picture, but I so want to create a video to talk to pastors about this whole idea. And I'm glad you're doing this. And I hope more pastors, lead pastors, youth pastors, children's pastors, anybody that's in ministry gets this book and starts to think about how we can protect our families.
Our hope is that it becomes a language that's among church staffs.
Yeah.
That, you know, they work through it together. It's a really short book. It's not like you got to take 8 weeks to go through it. It's more about personal application. That's what's going to take the time. You could read it all together, literally. I mean, everybody could sit in the room over lunch and read it. And it's designed that way for a reason. You know, you're talking about, you know, hoping more people like engage with it, and it helps people with burnout. You know, we actually started this workshop, the Myth of Balance workshop series. It's going now. And so it's a week or two in at this point. But here's a cool thing about it. And I would just encourage people, if you go to mythofbalance.com, you can click sign up. It's for the free workshop series. Doesn't cost anything at all. I want to emphasize that. We're going to spend 8 weeks just getting really practical on ways to manage all this stuff in ministry. And there's well over 700 people signed up for this. I mean, there's a lot of people signed up for this group. Actually, had to ask somebody the other day to look in to find out how big a closed group can get, because I didn't know, like, if it was going to cap out or something. I didn't know how that stuff works, you know. So it's exciting to see, but we're just going to spend 8 weeks, and there's going to be videos. I'll do a teaching each week. There's going to be live Q&A that we do. And I would just encourage your listeners, like, if they want to take this further and do something with this, you know, join in mythofbalance.com, click sign up. The book will help you, because I'll use some of that language, but you don't even have to have the book to be a part of the workshop series. We just want to get really practical and honest about the tensions we face and maybe how we can do it all a little better together.
Yeah. So I want to encourage people to do it. I've signed up. I'm in. Looking forward to it. I got the downloaded guide already.
Awesome.
So I'm ready to create a little notebook and learn how to do this better myself. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I think it's so cool to see so many people. So I'm going to encourage the Kid Ministry Collective community, get involved in this. If you're struggling with this area of your life, don't struggle anymore. And join probably 700-800 people who have all confessed as we've signed into this group that we're overworking junkies. We're addicts of ministry, and we all have good intentions, but we need to do it life better. There's no doubt about it. So Frank, thanks for being on here. Plug, you know, give everybody a way to stay and follow you and your wife, Jessica, as well. Tell about her blog real quick.
For sure. So at F Beeler, Beeler. So F Beeler. Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. I'm really active on social media because I think it builds a really great community. And so love that. I mean, number one thing for me was go to that workshop, sign up for that workshop. We'd love for you to be a part of that. And as we mentioned, my wife, who is a genius, she runs a blog called familyministry.church. Really simple to remember, familyministry.church. Every Monday or most Mondays, she posts something on multi-site. So they'll be facing specific challenges with multi-site. It's really helpful and practical content and just in the weeds of managing all this stuff. And then she writes a lot about being a woman in ministry and the unique tensions there. She faces, I don't know how to speak to those at all, but I hear that can be a challenge. And then also on volunteer content, you know, just how to lead your leaders and lead them better. So definitely check that out, familyministry.church. And then we look forward to seeing more of you in the workshop. And as you sign up, why don't you put Kid Ministry Collective in there or KMC. Let's find out a way of who your crew is that's signing up for it.
There we go. And since I actually have a second copy of the book, if you sign up, I'll make a deal here. If you sign up from listening to this podcast and you go in to the Myth of Balance group on Facebook and you sign up KMC, I'm going to be watching. I'll do a quick search and I'll see if I can't find. And you could also message me on KMC Facebook group. But I will give away one of Frank's books because I've got an extra copy, and I would be happy to share it with you. So if you listen to this and you sign up, message me, put it on there that you're part of the KMC group and you heard the podcast, and somebody's going to get a free copy. But I'd encourage you to go get it anyway. Just get on Amazon, buy it. That way you can start reading it and working through with it. So Frank, thanks so much, man. I hope to get you back on. And like I say, we'll get your wife on for sure. So you can warn her that I'll be calling.
Hey, Tom, this is fun. Thanks for chatting with me. It's always good to catch up with friends and dream about what could be and should be for ministry.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.